Hello and welcome to an all-new episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. As always, I am your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. Matt, it was a rough run there. We had about a 48-hour span where four A-10 teams got knocked out, as did both of the A-10 women's teams in that NCAA tournament. Things were very dark. And thankfully, the St. Bonaventure Bonnies, their five seniors amidst a disappointing regular season, gave us a little bit of light. We have an A-10 team playing into week two of the postseason for the first time in 4 years.
Is that right? 4 years? Nobody's made it this far, even in the NIT.
No, because the A-10 was a combined 1-6 in the NIT across the past three seasons.
Wow. I knew Richmond was our first tournament win since starting this podcast. That's impressive.
Richmond was also our first NIT win last season.
How about that?
They have two. The Bonnies have two.
Well, but I mean, just like we all expected, right? The Bonnies made it to the second weekend of March. They're the best team in the A-10 standings. It's just what we all said before the season. This was a team to watch. And the fact that they're still going to be playing basketball late into the month of March, that's something to be proud of.
Yeah, in these last two games, it's kind of felt like everybody's played well in at least one of the two. Jaron Holmes had maybe not his best game of the season, because I'm still a little fuzzy about November when he was awesome, but it was definitely his best game since then. Hit four threes on four attempts today. He's shooting under 30% from three for the year, so that was a much welcomed change in his game. Oshunashuna, he was awesome both games. Jalen Attaway really stepped up in the second half today. It kind of feels like the Bonnies are rolling again. We were at this point in like late February, and then they just lost it after the Oshun injury. They got killed by VCU in that game, and then they lose the St. Louis game on the heartbreaking loft and free throws. But like, those are both kind of aberration games. The Bonnies haven't really lost a game in a normal fashion in over a month now.
Yeah, you do have to go back a while. I mean, really, if you want to talk about like that Friday 10 game against Richmond, if that's what you're thinking of, where just kind of the end of their really down stretch where it was a team that just looked exhausted. But you're right, they are playing some really good basketball right now. I mean, that's back-to-back wins. I know it's the NIT and not premier opponents, but back-to-back wins on the road against a Pac-12 and Big 12 opponent. And now they'll get Virginia at home. So another good opportunity. Well, we're hoping. You never know. I mean, Dayton was the number one overall seed and just played two away games. So we're thinking they're at home. KenPom says they're at home. I'm going off that right now.
I'm almost certain that they do have priority, even though it's not official seeding, but enough people with legitimate insights into Bonaventure basketball have said that it's not a guarantee. So
yeah, what's up with that? Why didn't they just bother filling out all the seeds in the NIT bracket this year? That was kind of strange.
I think they just like ran out of ink or something.
Yeah, just didn't feel like it. I don't know. But yeah, we'll see though. I mean, good for them though. Like, I feel like the Bonnies too, this would be a great example of a team that would get to the NIT and completely just phone it in. I mean, anytime you're preseason top 25, a bunch of seniors expecting to make a deep run, you never know what the motivation level is going to be. But clearly these five guys don't want to see their careers end. And I mean, they all still have the option to come back, and we don't know what's going to happen there, but they're playing some good basketball right now, and they look like a team that could continue to advance.
Yeah, and hopefully they do, because especially if they make it to the Garden, at that point I would believe that they probably are all going to head out. Maybe one of them feels like they would just like to go grab a free master's degree. But if they go out on tops winning the NIT title, for a school like St. Bonaventure that does not have really that great of a history outside of two little stretches from the mid-60s to the mid-70s, and then basically these last 10 years, that's a really, really notable achievement.
Yeah. Unfurl another banner in the Riley Center.
Yeah, I mean, they already have a whole wall by their big donor lounge dedicated to the team that won the NIT in, I want to say, 1976. It was somewhere right around there.
Yeah, and when your New York's basketball team, it's not Syracuse anymore. That means something. So now that's exciting. I'm glad that we have somebody to root for the next couple weeks, or well, at least for one more game. I don't want to get carried away, but unfortunately, like you said, the rest of the A-10 is done. I feel like there might be one women's team playing in the WNIT, although I forget
VCU
who it is. VCU is still alive. Okay.
And Davidson finished third in the women's CBI, which is apparently already over.
That was quick. Hey, the CBI. So the A-10 did send a team to the CBI, though. I was not aware of that.
Technically, that is the WBI.
WBI. Okay. I'm glad that's still a thing, though. Is there a women's version of whatever the CIT got replaced by?
I'm not even sure that there's really a men's version of that this year. Teams keep pulling out mid-bracket in that tournament. So
I'm just pretty sure that Youngstown State and Dwayne Cohill are still alive, is
they
what
are
I've been
indeed.
Told. So, okay. Well, I guess we have a few teams knocked out, though, to talk about. Is there anywhere you want to start here?
Yeah, I guess we just kick it off with Richmond. Just put one final bow on this. We've covered them after each of their wins of this run. And that's what will be remembered out of this. We're going to forget about this Providence loss in like a month. Because, quite frankly, if they had even won that game, it's just toppings on piling on to this great ice cream sundae of a final week for these guys. The one thing I do want to shout out from the Providence game, Nathan Kao, coming off of what I thought was the most important game of his career against Iowa, was then awesome again against Providence. He closed out his career in such incredible fashion. A guy who really just kind of faded in and out throughout the years. And this year in particular was mostly an afterthought. But he closes things out with 9 of 11 shooting, 18 points, 5 rebounds. He was the one guy who put up a big game against what I've thought all year is a very underrated Providence squad. And they really proved it in that game. They're going to give Kansas one hell of a fight. And you can see the legs start to tire out early for Richmond. They're playing against a legitimate top 15 team in college basketball. And that's just kind of what happened. When you're the lesser team and you're tired, you're not going to win those games.
Yeah, and when you're also the lesser team and you give up over 50% from three, I mean, Providence was just on fire from the opening tip. And unfortunately, I think one of the problems for Richmond is the key to their success, starting with the A-10 tournament and into the Iowa game, is just Jacob Gilliard, I think, playing some of the best basketball of his career, especially from a scoring perspective. He was hitting a ton of threes, and unfortunately, he ends his career going 0-for-7 from deep. Just never could get it going, really. Like you said, KO had an excellent game, and I think this will help me remember him as maybe one of the more underappreciated players from what turned out to be a really good Richmond team at the end of the year, but they just didn't really get enough offense from anybody else. And like you said, Providence just played a great game, and they are a really good team that's going to give Kansas. I would be surprised if they didn't give Kansas a good game.
Yeah, taking it away from the A-10 here, I'm incredibly excited for that game. I think Providence has a very, very real shot to beat the Jayhawks. And
we have two former A-10 guys to root for. If you're into the where he at stuff, we do. They have Jared Bynum and Ed Crosswell. So,
and I guess that's worth pointing out here. Ed Crosswell made a huge difference in that first half. Because the big difference is Providence was just raining threes, getting open looks that Iowa simply was just not able to generate on Thursday. But Richmond hung around for the better part of those first 12, 14 minutes because they were controlling the paint. And then when Crosswell got in for his second shift of the game, he really started to put it to Richmond's big guys. It was just out-muscling them for rebounds. And if you didn't watch this game and you just look at the stats, you're going to gravitate towards the three-point shooting. And that's what put them in front. But Crosswell kind of put that game away. he snuffed out any hopes they had of a comeback late in the first half.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was probably the Golden Boys that tweeted this, but during Ed Crosswell's freshman year with LaSalle, he had a 16 rebound game against Richmond. So yeah, he's very familiar playing against the Spiders, and clearly it must have worked out for him. But overall for Richmond, I mean, look, they got blown out. Not how they wanted to end their season, but there's a lot worse things than getting blown out in the round of 32, especially when for almost the entire season, it looked like you weren't even going to make the tournament. And, you know, in the end, they really salvaged their season the last 2 weeks. And this will go down as a great success for a very good senior class that stuck together for many years. So just happy we got to see this team finally make it into March. We've said it a lot, but they really deserved it, especially after missing out in the 2019-20 season. And glad they got a win, too, against Iowa, which was huge.
Yeah, and just a congratulations on the way that the senior class finished out for Richmond. Grant Golden, Jacob Gilliard, Nathan Kao, Nick Sherrod. Who knows if Matt Grace comes back next year. Same with Andre Gustafson. They still have eligibility. And our guy Noah Goldberg, who wrapped up his official student coverage. He'll be graduating and moving on like the rest of those guys. So a great finish for all of those Richmond people. For Davidson, they lost, honestly, it feels like in more heart-wrenching fashion. Especially, you just kind of wonder if Mike Jones just takes another half of a second to set his feet in the corner and doesn't pull Azirius Williams and strike that three-pointer off the side of the backboard. What happens in that game? Because Michigan State was really struggling to get the ball up the court. And it was still a long shot comeback, but that was such an incredible look to get in that moment. I believe it would have cut the lead to 2.
I think that's right.
It was either 2 or 3. It would have gotten it to a one possession game.
And it really felt like one of those games where Michigan State was just doing everything they could to get to the finish line. Felt like a game where if there was another like 1 or 2 minutes on the clock, Davidson would have had a great chance, but just ran out of time. Like you said, though, they were causing Michigan State a lot of problems getting the ball up the court. Overall, though, I mean, I don't think Davidson has anything to feel ashamed of. It was a well-played basketball game on both ends. And, I mean, Michigan State ended up taking Duke pretty close down to the wire, too. But, yeah, just had 1 5-minute stretch late in the game where I think they were up 5 with about 7 minutes to go, and that turned into a 3-possession lead for the Spartans, where Davidson just went cold. And I think they had back-to-back shot clock violations at 1.2, which you would never expect to see under a Bob McKillop coach team. And just fell a little bit short, but overall they hung with the Spartans for about 35 minutes and a pretty evenly matched game, really.
Yeah, and Davidson just really couldn't get things going outside. Michigan State did a great job of shutting down the shooters throughout that game. They were 10 of 25 from 3, but a big reason for that was the comeback where they were just hitting basically everything. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Sam Menenga was on fire. Foster Lawyer and Mike Jones combined 2 for 9 from 3. It's really tough to win against a good Big Ten team when that happens.
Yeah, and really watching this game too, it almost made me feel like I don't know if Davidson's going anywhere next year. I mean, it's going to be tough for them to replicate what they did this year winning. I think they had, 27 wins. But Sam Menenga was keeping them in it in the first half when Luka went down with 2 fouls early and he didn't play the final 12 minutes of the first half. Menenga hit a couple more timely threes, which is something that, you know, all of a sudden since the A-10 championship game, turns out he's a good shooter. And then I was also really impressed by Grant Huffman really holding Davidson's defense together. His overall stats weren't that impressive, but he had 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, and a blocked shot. So he was doing a little bit of everything. And then they're still going to have Lee and Foster Lawyer coming back. I don't think we're sure of the status of Michael Jones, if he's going to use his, the rest of his eligibility next year somewhere else, just because of Davidson not really typically allowing players to stay past the fourth year. But I feel like there's still a lot of potential within this team, and they got a lot of contributions, not necessarily just from the star players.
So every reliable person I've talked to about Jones has no idea. So it is certainly far from a lock that he will be gone at the end of this year. And this is a team that I really want to talk about when we move into April, May, and start trying to put together our predictions for next year. Because so long as Lee and Lawyer are there, they will be good. Mm-hmm. And Bob McKillop, I mean, he's made the semifinals every year that they've been in the A-10. So the idea of just the automatic regression from guys coming back might not be there. Now, they're going to have to develop some other guys, whether it's Des Watson, whether it's one of these four stars that are coming in next year. They're going to need that infusion. But I love some of the breakout potential from Sam Menenga. And that's a guy that I really want to spend a lot of time discussing once we move into the offseason.
Yeah, his last couple games of the season have me excited for what he can become.
The only thing else worth pointing out for Davidson, and I believe it was the guys over at the Belk Report that were talking about this, but they haven't won a tournament game since Curry was there. And mm-hmm. now that they're in a multi-bid league and continue to get seeds in the 7-12 range consistently, that does feel like something that's going to have to happen here in the near future for them to really kind of make this step up as a program. McKillop doesn't have a ton of time left at the helm. He's clearly lined everything up for his son to take over. I don't think he's going to ride this until he's like in his mid-80s. And I think that this team just kind of needs one last signature run with him at the helm. Even if it's just winning one game, they need a big NCAA tournament win before he retires.
Yeah, I would hope so. And it's not like they haven't been close. I believe they took Kentucky very close a couple years ago when they won the A-10 tournament. So, yeah, that would be nice to see. But bringing back especially Foster Lawyer, Hyungjun Lee, and if we get that Menenga breakout, they could very well contend again for another conference championship.
I expect that they will. But speaking of a team that should absolutely contend next year, Dayton also gets knocked out today at the hands of Vanderbilt in overtime. And there were some comments on Twitter after they pounded Toledo about the quality of opponent. Well, Vanderbilt, as shaky as their record looks, is still an SEC team that beat some very good teams this year. And basically the Flyers did it all again, where they stepped up without Malachi Smith. And you almost wonder if they had a day in between halves in that Richmond game instead of 15 minutes, that they probably would have beaten the Spiders without him. Kobe Elvis has proved that he can be the backup point guard next year. Now, that's a job that hopefully Grant will rest Smith a little bit more often. That should be a job that entails 7 to 8 minutes a game. But the way that Elvis ran this offense the last 2 days, it should be him right now. And we'll see what else they can find as a third guard, because they do need better depth than they had by the end of the year. But he's someone that we started to waver on. He was pretty bad the last month of the regular season. He was awesome 2 straight games until that final possession.
Yeah, I mean, the very end of the game wasn't a happy ending for Dayton, but he did end up with 20 points, hit a couple of very big timely shots at the end. And for Dayton to make it as far as they did, almost beating Vanderbilt on the road too, without their point guard, that's something to be commended. And look, it's not the season Dayton fans wanted. It's a team that should expect to go to the tournament most years, but getting these guys, I hate talking about this, but it is one of the youngest teams in the country, and getting them some postseason experience. You know, we got a couple really good games out of Daron Holmes, which is going to benefit him. They were able to get some other role guys like Caleb Washington and Mulay Sissoko into the rotation. It's a benefit for Dayton that they got to play these 2 games against pretty quality opponents on the road, and they were very competitive, even though they lost against Vanderbilt today.
Yeah, and Caleb Washington had enough moments for us to believe that he could be helpful next season. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens there. He's someone that certainly showed enough for me to want to definitely have him back, see what he can do early in the year. I expect basically all of these guys to be back, save for I don't know what Mustafa Amziel will want to do. He really struggled down the stretch. He's someone that, if he gets better over this offseason, could be really the huge bench piece for Dayton next season. But if he kind of stays the same and someone like Mongolian Mike comes in and has a good year, or Caleb Washington gets better, he could find himself on the outs of the rotation. So we'll see where he heads. But
yeah, I know I texted you this, but it kind of felt like this was Caleb Washington's audition to break into the rotation more next year. And even though he didn't really do anything offensively, just attempted one shot, I thought he looked pretty good on defense. They put him on Scottie Pippen Jr. for a little while, and he was much quieter in the first half. I mean, overall, he's a big guy, 6'7", but he can handle the ball. It seems like he can guard a lot of positions, so I'm interested to see how he develops next year. And I think it gets forgotten that Dayton had another 4-star recruit this year that basically didn't even play.
Top 100.
Yeah, someone to keep an eye on next year.
Yeah, and then lastly, VCU got knocked out. They were just pillaged by foul trouble. This has been a pretty loosely called weekend across the board in college basketball. The two grand exceptions, obviously North Carolina against Baylor, and then VCU against Wake Forest. Ace Baldwin was in foul trouble all game. He basically could not keep himself on the court. Keyshawn Curry had some issues. Jaden Nunn had some issues. It was basically just on and on and on. They turned the ball over at really just a horrifyingly bad rate, especially for a team where that is typically not that big of an issue. They end up with 19 turnovers because they cleaned it up a little bit in the second half. But this was another team. It was good to let their young players get experience. Jaden Nunn had 18 points against Wake. He played extremely well against Princeton too. I'm going to hold back my judgment on where they're headed for next year till we find out if Williams and or Curry uses their COVID year. They'll be certainly top half, even if both those guys are gone, without question. They're one of the more interesting teams this offseason, but they closed the year decently well. The young guys were really good in the Princeton game, and Vince Williams kind of had to carry them in this one.
Yeah, I think similar comments to Dayton. VCU is a team that should expect to make the tournament most years, but still overall a pretty positive season for the Rams. I did see after that game, so Wayne Epps Jr. tweeted out that seems like Vince Williams has left the door open on potentially returning to VCU, hasn't made any decision yet. He did say Keyshawn Curry isn't planning on using his extra year, so that kind of bummed me out. I've enjoyed watching Curry play, but it's good to see him end his career playing the best basketball that he's had at VCU.
They kind of have too many wings if they both come back.
Yeah, it seems like VCU always has that
Jameer
problem.
Jameer Watkins is going to have to take the minutes of somebody. Yeah. So having both of those guys back actually ends up probably squeezing out a guy like Nick Kern who has to play.
And I'm sure with VCU, like, they probably have three or four other just super athletic wings that are going to play defense that we don't even know about yet. That's just what they do every year.
Yeah, and they also have a top 100 recruit coming in next season. But
oh, that's right. Isn't it? It's Fats, right? Somebody named Fats, I think.
I know the guy's name is Alfonso Billups. I
think it's Fats Billups, but yeah. We'll see. But yeah, all right,
if this is it for Vince Williams, 27 points in a game where basically all of his other backcourt mates couldn't stay out there. So That's a great way to close it out, even though it was in a loss.
Do we bring up St. Louis or do we not acknowledge 12-point losses at home to Northern Iowa?
Yuri didn't play. Most of it was during Dayton-Toledo. So I'll be honest, I watched like 10 minutes of that game. By the time the Dayton game was already wrapped up, which I was focused on, St. Louis was already getting pounded. So
yeah, well, that's 10 more minutes than I watched. And yeah, Urie didn't play. It sounds like really now the big thing to keep an eye on with St. Louis, will they get Javonte Perkins back? Since he does still have an extra year if he chooses to return after missing this season with his injury. And that would be a very interesting storyline over the summer if he does, see how he recovers and see if he's able to get back to his high levels as one of the best scorers in the conference next year. So hopefully he does, but I don't think we've heard anything yet.
Yeah, and this is all stuff that we'll need to recap down the road, but let's carry it into the other big news of the week, the head coaching searches. We'll leave GW alone for now because we've heard really just small rumblings. John Thompson III, I don't think he'd take that job, but if he did, that would actually be a boon for George Washington.
I'm still surprised, though. I was not expecting Jamie and Christian to get fired from GW.
I wasn't as well.
And I think what it came down to, I almost just wonder if they realize that we're getting some pretty good recruits, guys like James Bishop, Bama Seal, even Breon Freeman was a 3-star, I think, and they're still like middle of the pack at best with a bunch of close wins against bad teams. I don't know if they just figured that's the ceiling and it's not going to get any better than this, but still, after the surprisingly good conference season, that caught me off guard.
It was a bold move. I'm not entirely sure it was the wrong move because I think they were a huge regression candidate for next year. They still never figured out how to play defense.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a difficult team to bring back, but we'll cover GW once that starts to heat up more. UMass is like basically all you can take out of these rumors is that they have been really good at keeping what's actually going on quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just so many names being thrown around. There's so much hearsay that's just bouncing back and forth, whether it's from people who are fans of UMass with potential insider ties to even someone like Jeff Goodman. It's just different information coming out from different people. The best that I have heard is that they are definitely willing to spend big money if they need to. So they could potentially make a big splash. I think that would certainly make the idea of a guy like Frank Martin possible. The idea of stealing Mark Schmidt from Bonaventure possible, although I still don't think that'll actually happen, but who the hell knows at this point? This week's going to be really fascinating because it does seem like they are at least making some sort of progress in beginning to pare it down.
I think they probably missed out on Shaheen Holloway now after St. Peter's made a run.
He's
going to
be the Seton Hall coach.
Yeah, sounds like that's pretty much a done deal.
There's no way, whether they've talked or not, which I'm sure they have, if he doesn't take that job, it's because he wants to just stay at St. Peter's.
Which, I mean, maybe, but has any coach gone to – what did the Oral Roberts coach do? Like, has any low-major coach gone to the Sweet 16 and stayed? Except for,
well,
I guess
– Enfield did when Florida Gulf Coast went, but he left, like, 2 years later.
Oh, I thought that was the next year. Okay.
I don't think it was immediate.
Yeah, but what do you think about Frank Martin, though? Because I think looking at his resume is pretty interesting. He was at South Carolina 10 years. Only went to one tournament, but it was a Final Four year. And they also had a bunch of NITs mixed in. So it's not like they were ever that bad up until the last, like, 2 years. They weren't very competitive in the SEC, but I'd have to believe UMass can't do a whole lot better than him.
It's a good pickup if they grab him. He's a guy who had a ton of success at
Kansas State, right?
Not a great job at Kansas State. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly not the best job in the Big 12, but he had a ton of success there. He's a big name. I mean, his face was plastered all over the postgame shows all day Thursday, Friday. The host really was sucking up to him. at the end of that show when they were signing off. He's a big name. He's someone that's going to be able to bring in recruits because of the success that he's had elsewhere. And I think people also think that his tenure at South Carolina was a lot better than it was because he made that Elite Eight run. And so that helps you in recruiting too.
Yeah. And maybe that's what UMass needs. Like they went after a young coach and Matt McCall last time as an up-and-comer, didn't really work out. Maybe they need just a veteran that has coached some big-name teams that can get them back in a position where in a couple of years UMass can at least be competitive in the A-10. Maybe that would be the path to success, but we'll see what happens. I think with Mark Schmidt, I can't imagine. I wouldn't be surprised if UMass could offer him more money than Bonaventure, but it seems like if Schmidt were to move on, he could just do better than UMass, right? And no offense to the Minutemen, but it seems like there would be a better opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he had no interest in the Boston College job last year. Like, is he going to jump within the same conference? That's the piece of this that I just never believed. I can't imagine UMass is going to pay him just the insane significant amount of money to make it worth this, because he also has incredible job security at Bonaventure. Like, how bad would he have to be over a 3-year span to get fired? Like, are we talking 3 or 4 straight pillow fight trips? Versus UMass, if he comes in and he can't build it from the ground up super quick, he could be out within 3 to 4 years. It's not like it's a more significant job from a national media perspective. It's not like it's going to be any easier to reach the tournament there. But there's going to be higher pressure. I can't imagine he takes it unless they offer to double, maybe triple his salary.
Yeah. Phil Martelli's in the Sweet 16. Think he'd give it any thought? Or is that just a dream?
I think UMass is kind of in a spot when you look at the candidates they're looking at, where they'd either want to go significantly younger with somebody like Kamani Young, or somebody who's just a more accomplished, bigger name recently than Martelli.
Yeah, that's probably right, even though I'd still like to see it. I guess, do we have anything else to say? I know you already talked about this a bit on the last episode, but any other comments on the one coaching move that has happened within the A-10? Down the street, or, well, down the highway?
Unbelievable pickup for Rhode Island getting Archie Miller. We'll talk about Sean in a minute. I mean, this is a guy who was just getting himself to consistent NCAA tournaments at Dayton. He laid the groundwork for the 2020 team, for Anthony Grant to be able to step into that job and take them to a higher level. He's going to make Rhode Island good almost immediately. People are going to kind of roll their eyes and think about how bad he was at Indiana, but these are two different jobs. Indiana was about getting 5-star recruits, about bringing guys in and churning them out to the NBA, and about trying to make Final Fours. Dayton was about getting the guys that he wanted and building a program, and now he gets to do that again. And so we have absolutely no reason to possibly believe that he won't be successful at it again. Now he can get guys that he wants, guys that he feels like he can mold into good players.
It's exciting, and I'm torn as a Dayton fan, but it's exciting to have him back in the A-10. And you're right, I would be surprised if Rhode Island wasn't contending soon. It took Archie 3 years at Dayton, where year three ended up being the Elite Eight year, but you know, I would be surprised if by 2025 Rhode Island wasn't at least a double by team in the A-10, and possibly much more than that. So it's going to be interesting, and even next year too. I know right now, like, Rhode Island's a team we shouldn't even bother talking about their roster, because we just don't know who's going to be there. Just about every key player has put their name in the portal, but Archie's a guy that knows how to work the portal himself, and some of Dayton's best players while he was there were transfers, and that's really kind of how he filled out the rest of his team around the core recruiting class that he had that graduated the year he left Dayton. So it's going to be interesting to see, and I don't really think the Indiana results matter all that much because it is such a different job being in the A-10 versus a blue blood or a program that thinks they're a blue blood, but really they're not. So it'll be fun. And I don't think Rhode Island could have done any better than Archie. That's a home run. And if it goes wrong, you can't fault the process for bringing in a proven winner in the Atlantic 10.
Yeah, we'll see how quickly he gets it up and running, but you know that he's going to. I mean, if he can just hit the portal for one or two solid guys this year, they could be top half next year. And I think that's why they moved on from David Cox, because the roadmap really just wasn't there for them to get into double bye territory in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, so pretty shocking news, but it's exciting. And that's like a meme that we've had too, that an A-10 school is going to hire Archie, but I still can't believe it actually happened.
Yeah. And I want to close things out with a special Where He At coaches edition.
Ooh.
Former A-10 coach Sean Miller of Xavier has been rehired at Xavier. And I'm so mad at every reporter for tweeting out former Arizona coach has been hired by Xavier. Why couldn't one of you have just tweeted former Xavier coach Sean Miller has been hired by Xavier?
And that's where he turned himself into a big name. I mean, it all started at Xavier. So, I mean, he dominated the A-10 for a couple of years while he was there. And I don't know. That's not something you see very often. But I think Xavier, I mean, they'd probably hit a home run too. I don't think they could have done much better than bringing Sean Miller back.
Yeah, because they already sold their soul to him once. Why not do it again? We know he's a great coach.
Yeah,
that part is not in question.
Yeah, they're gonna win, which it makes me sick, but it's also kind of like, as a fan of college basketball, that makes it interesting having him back in the game too. Except for, yeah, now to Rhode Island and Xavier both hired podcasters to be their next coach. When are we going to get our shot?
Can we get the Chicago State job since they turned down Mark Titus?
I was about to say that might be your best chance. Or Duquesne, because didn't Titus go after that job for a while?
Yeah, he did try to get it when they hired Dan Brott.
Well, maybe when Dan Brott retires, we'll be in next in line. I mean, you've got some connections to the Dukes program.
Yeah, and I want to end this with one proposal based off of these last two hires that we've talked about. I think that we should now have the Miller Cup, a once-a-year four-team tournament between Rhode Island, Xavier, Dayton, and Indiana can rotate in and out each year with who gets to play in it, in Arizona. We let the brothers play each other. We get to let them play their old teams. And I think that from a content standpoint, this is something that even ESPN or Fox would want to get behind. Fox has Pac-12 and Big East. That's Xavier and Arizona. They could throw this on FS1 for a Friday, Saturday.
Maybe. I keep thinking, like, they keep bringing it up every game, and it kind of hit me. Do you think Daron Holmes regrets not going to Arizona and being on a one seed? I feel like he wouldn't be playing, but man, that's unreal how good they are this year. And
depends. Does he want to play minutes?
Yeah. I feel like they have a really good big man when I've watched them the last couple of weeks, but I don't know that they could win the national championship though, which is kind of crazy that it's the year after they fired Sean Miller.
What's even more crazy is right now, as we're recording this, they do have just a slim lead over the all-time coach who cannot swing upsets in Jamie Dixon. So we'll see if they can hold on to that. If they lose a 1-9 game as the one to Jamie Dixon, then this was not the season that everyone thought it was.
The Jamie Dixon factor. Wow. Yeah, I forgot that was on. Okay. Well, let's go Bonnies. That's our last hope. Any other thoughts?
No, the Bonnies are back. It is a less than 48-hour turnaround. It is now official. They're going down to Charlottesville, Virginia, because seating order means nothing to the NIT. 7 p.m. on Tuesday on ESPN, so they get the big TV slot. But if they win that game, they're heading to Madison Square Garden for the semifinals. And if they win, I can promise you that we will have something very special lined up in preparation for that final week. So stick around for that. Our next episode will either be an all Bonnies, all NIT episode or a season wrap up. I really hope it's the first. But thank you all for listening to another episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, give us 5 stars on iTunes if you like the show. Leave us comments on there. Send us your thoughts on Twitter at the number 3 Bid League Pod. Let's go.
What I have now.